dying
Lindsay,
to answer this.
You ready?
Yes.
I feel like more people need to take advantage of Lindsay's expertise in this space.
I have 100,000 followers and then I only get like 100 likes.
What would you recommend for scaling a service-based business and what kind of pay structure would get me there?
The number one thing they always say is, I love your thing, it's working, but it's too much for me. So is there any way I can reduce those objections based on the price point?
Welcome back to the Boss Babe podcast. All right, if I sound a little bit nasally, I caught whatever Noemi's been fighting off, whatever virus she had. I now officially have been tagged in because, listen, what's more fun than looking after a sick child than catching the virus and still having to look after a sick child? Mum life, that's where we're at. So if I don't sound the most amazing, that is why. But anyway, today we have a really, really good episode in store. And I feel like we are constantly talking about the society and how incredible it is. If you want to build a freedom-based business, this is the place that you want to be. It's the entire framework to running a freedom-based business and every single rhythm you could possibly need. I mean, we share the entire rhythm we use at Boss Babe, things that I and my team do on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. Like, there's literally no gatekeeping. I remember putting all these resources inside and being like, I actually worry that I'm giving too much away because someone could literally just duplicate our business. And I just also don't think like that. So it's amazing. And what I thought was, instead of just talking about it and letting you join to experience it, why not give you a taste of what the coaching calls might actually look like? So for this episode, what I'm actually doing is letting you listen to one of the coaching calls for free. So this one was a Q&A session. So I'm on almost all of the calls every single week with the society. My team also lead calls, but I normally lead them, co-lead them, or I'm there. We kind of take turns just depending on what topics we're covering. But every month I do a Q&A. I also do a session where I help you implement systems in your business, whether that's audience growth systems, sales systems, operation systems, whatever it is. We do that. We do mindset calls to like really keep you on track. We do planning calls, all of this. This was a Q&A call where we dove into things like funnels, how to focus on one thing and what that one thing should be, talking about if you have an e-com store, what that looks like, because I know a lot of the time we talk about service-based businesses. So we go all over, but it was really valuable. And I thought, let me just give you a taste of it. So I hope you enjoy it. The Society really is the most incredible program. It is our flagship program at Boss Babe. We pour our heart and soul into it. And right now, enrollment is open. So it generally costs $997 to join the Society. We only offer annual. Right now, and for a very, very limited time, you are actually able to join us monthly for $97. It is a no-brainer, you guys. Just the curriculum you get instant access to is the equivalent of a $1,000 course. So there's the curriculum, you have a template vault, your community, you have coaching calls with me. The value of this is beyond. So if you are wanting to build a freedom-based business, I would jump on this now. This is the time to be able to join us at this price. This is going to close, as most of you will know, when our monthly is closed. You can only join for $997. And this is the first time in six, seven months we've actually opened monthly. So we're really, really excited about it. Listen to the episode, get a feel for what we do. And then if you're interested, all the information's in the show notes if you want to come and join us. Hello, everyone. Welcome in. I love a Q&A session. I'm so excited for this one. I absolutely love getting the chance to jump in. Rachel's like, I've got a question. We're good to go. I love it.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm in the car. So that's why I dropped my eager beaver, wanted to make sure I got in. So thank you for that. My question for you is funnel related stuff, which I guess is perfect for everyone listening in who might be thinking about freedom fast track. I'm working on a new funnel and basically I wanted some feedback on where to go next. Can I share what I have planned out so far?
Yeah. Where are you at right now?
So I have a pod funnel that I'm working on. I will be doing a secondary invite to a webinar funnel. Right now, I don't have capacity for that because I am giving birth in 4 weeks. So that'll come after. So for now, it's just passive pod funnel. to an email sequence. And I will be leveraging content in ManyChat as well. My question for you is around the emails. How many series of emails do you recommend? And then I was also going to do a downsell, which would be a 7-day trial for those who don't convert to, by the way, it's a membership. So for those who don't convert to the membership, I was thinking of doing a 7-day trial as a downsell.
Love it. Well, congratulations. Keep us all posted. We welcome any and all baby pictures inside society. So I would recommend your email sequence be 7 to 10 days. There should be templates. If you're an annual, there should be templates already in there for you. But yeah, 7 to 10 days. And then love the downsell idea. Let's just wait maybe 2 to 3 days before introducing your downsell and then do that.
Okay, great. I am annual. I didn't even notice that there was a template. I was actually going to request one. So I'm going to go dig for that and model that and hope for the best. So thank you.
I'm excited for you for many reasons.
That's great magic. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Maria, you want to go next?
Okay, sorry. Okay. So my question was more about like the next step. So Natalie, you got me thinking because before I was like, oh, you know what? I think I'm not going to do my course. I'm going to leave it to the side. I have my clients. So just for you to remember myself, I have my clients for Pilates and I also am an actor. So I was like, okay, where should I focus? And then I remember your workshop of the offer. And then I saw your masterclass. And I was like, oh God, but I don't feel is it for me like to have maybe a course or something like that. So I was thinking like, if you say you only have one offer and right now my offer is my 101, but I'm reaching a point that I'm filling my schedule like crazy, but it still feels a little bit overwhelming sometimes, you know, like I can have 6-7 classes a day. So, but I feel like my question would be more like, would that mean my just one offer or should I be thinking something else? Because at the same time, I'm working with brands as an influencer, starting to move that, I'm creating relationships, and I'm looking for, you know, like for my castings, auditioning. So I have all of these in my shoulders and I'm like struggling a little bit, but I don't know, I want your guidance in that one thing I should focus on.
I love it. So yes, I'm all here for focusing on one thing. I feel like I can't say what that one thing should be for you, but let me just give you some things to think about that might help. So generally when someone is completely filled with one-to-one, the next step could be a group program. If you know that you are completely full on one-to-one and you wouldn't have trouble filling a group program, that might be the next logical step where you then focus all of your energy. That's the way that I would work it. And then, you know, once you've got that up and running and that's working, maybe then down the line, you would think about a course or something like that. But that's the lens that I would generally look through, making sure that you can fully dedicate yourself to whichever one it is that you're going to choose. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I was also thinking that like putting myself more like live maybe and doing more classes to bring people in and also to build a little bit more virtual, because my hope one day is to move back to the US, so I would like to bring that business more online.
Definitely try it. I mean, you have a great following already, you have a great engaged community, so you could definitely try it. I would say just stay focused on whichever one it is that you decide you're going to jump into.
Could I ask you one more thing?
Yes.
Okay. So it's not the last time I wanted to ask you, but we ran out of time. So according like with my Instagram, like I've been focusing for the past last year just in creating community and more engagement and giving more just to talk with that following, because as you said, and you say it a lot, and it's like, yeah, you're so right. Like you can focus on growth, but then it comes to a point that you don't see anything. Doesn't matter how many followers you have, because you need to engage with these people. So I feel like I've been working on it, but then my reach has really decreased a lot. In a way, thanks God, brands are not looking at that much. So I've been getting a lot of deals with brands, but at the same time, I feel I like my content is not being shown as much. Do you have any insights on that? I've been doing all that you did. I'm working on the 10-10, so I have to give you an update about that later on. But I don't know if there's something else going on or I've seen like accounts, like, because it's so weird, like I have 100,000 followers and then I only get like 100 likes, and it's like, and it was organic. It's not like I bought their followers, so it's just weird.
Yep, I can jump into that and I will share for everyone else. So you guys will have heard me talk about so many times, there's only three types of content. There's content to grow your audience, content to build your brand, and content to convert. And you really want to think about what mix makes sense for you based on what your business goals are. So if your business goals are to grow your audience, then you're going to be focused way more on content that grows your audience and content that builds your brand. Maybe it's 75% audience growth, 25% brand building. If you're primarily focused on conversion, you're going to be thinking content that converts, probably going to be 75 to 90% of what you're spending time on. So when you're thinking about crafting your social media strategy, you really want to start with your goals in mind. What really is my goal for social media? And then work backwards from there. So that's the most important thing. I can't say what that is for anyone because it's going to be so different just depending on the season that you're in. What I will say for anyone that is wanting to boost their reach and isn't seeing their posts going out there, getting the reach that they really want it to, is you have to focus on viral content. That's the number one thing. And often that will then, the way it works is your posts only get shown to a certain percentage of your audience. And then the more of those, the more people that resonate in that short window of time, Instagram will show it to more people and more people and more people. And once you've had a post like that really pop off, the post you put up after the fact is going to get shown to more people by default. So I call it being one of the best ways to reset your reach and your engagement is those viral style posts. So that's where I would focus. If someone was wanting to boost engagement, I would focus on that kind of content, but just make sure that it is mixed in with whatever your personal business goals are, which I know is different for everyone.
Thank you.
And then you're so welcome. And then for anyone who is wondering the best place to learn about that stuff, it's inside your curriculum. That is inside there. The place that I would recommend you go to if you haven't already watched it is, if it's in your audience growth pillar, it's a recap of a keynote that I gave to Brendan's Ultra Mastermind last month. There we break down our funnel on social media, but we also analyze, I'm saying we as if my whole team was on stage. I'm analyzing all of the different viral posts that we put out there and exactly why each one went viral. So all of the different things that I did. And then I also put a challenge in there for anyone that wants to go viral. So yeah, just putting that out there. That's a really good place to go. And there's a little challenge, and that's what Maria was referring to. Ashley, you want to go next? I'm just going one by one to whoever asks questions.
Hi, Natalie. Okay, so what I do is I help HR professionals. I basically provide HR training or HR compliance training to HR professionals. So right now there's a new law that came out in California that requires employers to put in or implement a workplace violence prevention plan, and they have to do that by July 1st. So I am launching a program to help HR professionals do that, where they'll actually implement it with me. So I've been working on a lead magnet, but I'm also working on, I also want to do webinar conversion event, but I don't know where to focus my time because I have to have my program up and running, obviously, so that they can finish by July 1st, you know? So should I work on the lead magnet and kind of trying to drive people to the lead magnet, then to the conversion event? Or do you just go directly to trying to drive people to the webinar conversion event?
Since you have a compressed timeline, I would just get people into the webinar and then enroll them through the webinar. You don't need to have your whole thing finished for them by the time they buy. If you're going to be able to teach it live or something like that, or deliver the modules weekly, then you can do it that way. But I would just drive people into your conversion event, your webinar.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
The other day, the team and I were talking about how much our audience loves biohacking. And whenever we release content based around creating better habits for our lifestyle and health, you all seem to really soak it up and request more. So I wanted to share about our podcast sponsor, Prolon, today, because I've never seen a company like this. Prolon is a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making cells believe that they're fasting. There are so many strategic benefits to fasting, and Prolon helps you hit these goals without actually needing to fast. Prolon's 5-day program includes snacks, soups, and beverages, all designed to keep your body in a fasted state. And you get everything prepackaged, labeled, and ready to go, so there's no guesswork. It's super simple and it works. Extended fasting of at least 2 to 3 days has proven to produce unique benefits like cellular rejuvenation, metabolic support, and increased cardiovascular health. So if you're ready for a fasting program that doesn't leave you hungry or exhausted and instead gives you more energy, I highly recommend giving Prolon a try. Right now, Prolon is offering Boss Babe podcast listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/bossbabe. That's prolonlife.com/bossbabe for this special offer. prolonlife.com/bossbabe.
I have had a Masterclass membership for years now, and it's still one of my favorite educational platforms to this day. Masterclass is one of our podcast sponsors, and I love putting in my AirPods and listening to their latest classes on the airplane, during long travel days, or when I'm taking a solo walk and really want that dose of inspiration. If you haven't explored it yet, go to masterclass.com/bossbabe and scroll through some of the categories. I really think you'll love what you see. There are over 200 classes to pick from, with new classes added every single month. I thought Mark Cuban's recent class, Win Big in Business, was really interesting. He talks about Shark Tank, how to evaluate risk, and strategy to market smarter. It was so good. Not only does Masterclass have tangible business development classes that you can watch at your desk or listen to on the go, but it also includes classes in 10 other categories ranging from food, home and lifestyle, music, wellness, design, and so much more. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. Right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/bossbabe. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/bossbabe. masterclass.com/bossbabe. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass.
You're very welcome. Rhea said, how do you use Notion for your business and integrate with Asana? This is a great question. So Notion is very much used as a company wiki. So it's just an overview of every bit of information that you might need about the company, where you can find everything. It's just an overview information hub. And then Asana is more project and task management. So we wouldn't necessarily assign people things in Asana. We would, in Notion, sorry, we would always do that inside of Asana. But we wouldn't necessarily put all of the project information and Google Drive layout and everything like that inside of Asana. So Notion is very much a wiki. And then Asana is the project management hub that we use.
Is that, do you automate, like in Notion allows you to be automated to what Asana is doing? So it
we
shows,
don't automate
it's
anything.
It's like a board, right?
Yeah, we don't automate anything in Notion. We just put information in Notion and everything else is in Asana.
Okay, okay. So in your meetings, you update what Notion based on any latest update, basically.
Yeah. So your hub, that front page, you can update that each week, if that makes sense for you, with what's going on in the company. The way that I think about Notion in your wiki is like an intranet. If anyone remembers intranets from back in the day, where a company would have that, it's basically like an internal website for your company. It's the thing that only your employees see. That's what I would see your Notion as. But then any moving parts and projects, any tasks that need to be assigned, you know, checking up on how much people have on their plates, are they staying on top of their task? That's all done in Asana. Does that make sense? Yeah. That front page on Notion is just like, what do I want everyone in my company to see this week, to know what we're working on, to just have more of a clear picture of the company? But then Asana is like, here's what needs to get done. Maria said, what is the best funnel for a $27 membership? Would a webinar work? So I don't know if there's such thing as a best funnel. I feel like that every funnel works if you make it work, right? That's one thing I do want to echo, is just because I recommend a certain type, or you've seen me execute a certain type, I don't want you necessarily to think that's the one you have to do if that's not the one that lends itself to your skills, because every funnel will work when you make it work. So things that I have seen work really well for memberships is webinars, PDFs, free trials, anything like that, I see work really, really well. I would class free trial as a funnel. I would class the free trial as the conversion event. You know, you want them to have a certain experience when they're in there, and then you want them to retain. So everything will work. I would really just think about, when you're coming up with your conversion event, what skills do you have that would work best for a conversion event? what are your ideal clients looking for? What would be most interesting to them? Like your ideal clients, when you're thinking about qualifying them, what would be most interesting to them? And then what is your platform set up to be able to do? So we don't use a free trial funnel right now. Just quite frankly, free trial funnels are a lot to build out, because free trials, and if anyone's interested in this kind of thing, there's a lot of membership books, the automatic customers one. When you look into free trials, there's a lot of psychological boxes that you really need to hit in order to have people feel like they're getting a win right away and they're going to retain and they're not overwhelmed and all the things. That's just not something I'm focused on building for the society. So I'm not currently running one of those. I've done it in the past, but my preference is webinars. I, 7 years ago, just decided I'm going to get good at webinars. And that's just the one thing that I got good at. Not to say that it's the right thing, but it just works for me. So lots of different options. Another thing that I would recommend doing as well is, if you do know of a membership that is similar, has a similar ideal client, things like that, I would go through their funnels, see what the conversion events they're using, see how they're driving clients, and see if there's any kind of clues being left there that could support you.
Great. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Okay. Sarah Fisher, you want to go next?
Yes. Thank you. So excited. A little of how I got here. Last year, my background is in healthcare, high acuity nursing stuff. And last year, some life things happened and I'm working on leaving healthcare. So I'm looking around, I'm like, what can I do totally outside of healthcare? And I started my own LLC as a virtual assistant, taking on clients there. And so my biggest client is a wealth management financial advising firm. And in recent months, I've gotten, basically I have more work for them than I can do. When I renegotiated my contract, they said, hey, are you interested in starting an agency? Because we love the work that you're doing. We know there's some agencies that target wealth management firms and financial advisors, and we'd support you if you wanted to do that. So I'm in this stage of growth where my attitude has just been like, say yes to opportunities, but I have more work than I can handle. Yeah, I guess my question is, what would you recommend for scaling a service-based business, and what kind of pay structure would get me there? Does that make sense?
That does make sense. I might pivot this question to Lindsay, but I want to ask you something first. What is it that you want to do?
I don't know what I want to do, but I've been the primary income earner for our family. My husband is in a job where he can't make more money. So I have to figure out how to make more money outside of healthcare. I enjoy leading people, and I enjoy being good at what I do. So with that, I think the pivot into growing a team as a service-based business, it is something that interests me, and I do think I would be good at it. So that's a tough question of what do I really want to do?
Okay, thanks for
sharing
that. Because
I can't say that I know.
Okay, the reason that I ask is I might just encourage you just to slow down a little before pulling the trigger on building an agency. And the reason that I say that is, let me kind of pull back a little bit. We often think that because a client's willing to, and I'm not saying you think this, I just want to put this just in case it's relevant to everyone. We often think that just because a client is willing to pay us more money, that if we hire a team and our business is making more money, we'll make more money. But actually what can happen, and I've been there, the more people you hire, the more people you're paying, the less you're paying yourself. And that is often a situation that doesn't feel great to a lot of people, where you're literally managing tons of people. You're not doing the work that you wanted to be doing anymore. You know, you're fixing other people's mistakes. You're paying everyone else and you're struggling yourself. And you get onto a bit of a hamster wheel where you need to bring in more clients, more clients, more clients. And your job as salesperson and team manager, problem solver, versus being in a place where you're at right now, where you've got something really steady and it's working really, really well. I might just encourage you to just slow down on that decision and just really think about, is this what I want? Do I want to build an agency? And if I do, let me explore what that path would look like. Here's what my role would be. I would be bringing in clients so we could sustain payroll, and I would be managing people, and I would have to make sure people are doing their jobs, all that kind of thing. Lindsay, do you want to add anything from the industry lens, the agency lens?
Yeah. So I've run agencies before, done a little bit of everything. So the two main things, Natalie's question is number one, is it really what you want? Because that's Anytime you're looking to like take what you're really good at and then turn it into something that you have to manage other people doing, you have this risk of the Peter principle, right? Is like you were good at it. So now you get elevated to a position where now you have to manage other people who are supposed to do it. And people automatically assume because you were good at it, you'll be good at managing other people. That's not always true. And frankly, it's mostly not true. So that's a big question that only you can answer. The second thing is, if you're confident about that, what I would say is, yeah, you know, it's enticing and very promising and probably realistic that there's more opportunity out there for you than you can physically do yourself. And so if you say, okay, I do want to explore scaling here, my recommendation would be to, one, get really clear on what you will still do and what you will have to delegate and have a plan for that ahead of hiring anyone. Because what I've done in the past is I've gotten a new contract and been like, well, I guess I should hire someone to help. And then I didn't have any plan to how I would delegate. So it just ended up like twice as much work because I'm trying to have them do things, but I have to do it with them because they don't know how to do it. So then instead of it being expansive and allowing more clients to come in, it just means I'm doing twice as much work. So really having a SOP or some type of playbook designed of this is everything we do. And then when you onboard someone, you take the first couple of weeks and really intentionally train them so they can become effective and billable in that way. The second thing I would look at in bringing on client or new team is we talk about this a lot internally at Boss Babe, is like, we're not going to hire until someone's capacity is fully reached. So it's this question of, are you really at capacity or are you kind of flailing because you're not well organized? And is there more capacity that could get you up to your earning level that you want to be at without having to add someone in? And there's that question. And then the next question is, okay, if you are ready to hire really, really, really slowly, one person at a time, get them up to capacity, do a really good job, bring on another person, get them up to capacity, do a really good job. What tends to happen in agency models, at least in my experience, is you get excited and you're like, there's 7 wealth management companies that need help. I'm going to go bid all 7 and I'm going to bring on 5 people at the same time. And we're going to run this big wealth manager VA agency, but you can't onboard 7 people at the same time. You cannot do a good job of that. And you'll end up in this place of burnout and blowing it all up. Like someone in the comments said, and I've been there, like hire too many people too quickly, took on too many clients at the same time. Nothing went well. And it was a money grab. Ultimately, it's like, well, there's so much opportunity. I want to get all these contracts, but I can't do the work and train people at the same time. So that would be overarching. Do you really want to do it? If you do want to do it, do you have SOPs and playbooks in place? So when you hire people, they are coming on with really clear structure to be effective. And number 3, as you hire, do it one person at a time and make sure they hit capacity before you add more people in so that you truly can measure your KPIs and know that having more income coming into the business actually turns into more profit for you to take home.
Good things to think about. Thank y'all both.
What you said, Lindsay, about you will end up doing double the work and you'll get half the pay. So
yeah,
whenever you're hiring a team, something to think about. It's not always the most fun. Yeah. And I love to just paint all pictures of it of like, this is the reality.
And it's really tempting to hire people without everyone else being at capacity. And that's this hidden thing of team where it's like, if you're hiring a bunch of people and not everyone's at capacity, it's actually harder to manage everyone. Cause now everybody's doing a little bit of everything instead of having like, hey, you're at capacity. We're going to take this whole piece of your job and we're going to turn it into someone else's job and expand them out. Like that's such a better way to manage people and grow a team in a scaling environment than everybody's at 75%. And now I've got extra capacity and not really sure how to delegate across multiple people.
Yeah. I echo all of this.
Yeah.
Okay. Celeste, you want to go next?
Hi, Natalie. So my question is that I have a branding studio focused on women and now I'm trying to build my personal brand. So my vision is literally help you become that girl that is like the vision and the girl with the business, beautiful, empowered, all of that. So I started posting things about how to get a glow up on TikTok. And I had a really, really good response, like over 1 million views. But then I was like, okay, I started this because for me, having a glow up was actually the first step to show up confidently on social media. And I see that as a tool, so it can add value to my brand. But now I'm thinking that I don't know if it's okay to mix the two topics on my socials, or it will attract completely different niches. Because the end goal for me is to have maybe a membership or a mini course that teaches you how to first feel beautiful, confident, and then how to start on social media to grow your business. So I don't know.
I love this question. I think this is going to be relevant for a lot of people. I get the question a lot of, is it okay to mix my interests or share multiple messages and things on your socials accounts and with your personal brands? My answer is a resounding yes, because what I call this, and those of you that are in influencer school will know, I call this your edge. This is the edge you bring to your personal brand. And if your personal brand is just so niche, it's not so much of a personal brand because it doesn't have a lot of personality. So your brand, if you have a business, you have a brand, it could be more niche, but your personal brand is never going to be that niche because it's a personality. And so thinking about the different content pillars, the different elements of your personality, your personal brand, the edge that you bring is really, really powerful. And so the more things you can blend into that, I think makes actually a more compelling personal brand. So yes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
You're so welcome. And for everyone too that is thinking about personal brands, think about the personality of your personal brand. Just like you have a personality, right? You're very multifaceted. You're very much interested in lots of different things. There's different sides and edges to you, and that's what makes you interesting. It's very much the same with your personal brand. And it's the thing that will attract people or repel people towards you, is having that personality. So it's a really good way to think about your brand. Okay, the next question is, how to sell $3,000 products when you aren't a business coach? I managed to sell $1,000 through webinars, but anything above that is hard. I'm a femininity coach and I help women date up by getting rid of anxious attachment and by leveling up. Okay, so this is a really good question for everyone is, really, we're talking about how to sell higher ticket products. So 1,000 was great. 3,000 is a little bit harder. It doesn't matter what kind of niche you're in, what kind of coach you are, what you're doing. Is it possible? Absolutely, yes. What is essential with anything that you're selling is that it is an irresistible offer. Irresistible. So did any of you catch the webinar last week? If you haven't, definitely grab the replay before it goes away. We talked on that webinar about what makes a really profitable offer. And we talked about people either buy something because it helps them avoid pain or it helps them move closer to pleasure, right? And so offers that sit smack bang in the middle of the two are never going to be super irresistible offers because they're like an upgrade offer or a nice to have or something like that. So you really want to think about, which side of it am I sitting on and what would make this offer absolutely irresistible, and get that part dialed in first. And then the second part to that is, in what way does it make most sense to sell this to my ideal client? And you might find that as your ticket price goes up, as the amount you're charging goes up, your kind of customer might need more of a high touch experience. They might need a sales call. They might need a video from you. They might need a conversation. And so that's what you really want to test. There's no one size fits all answer to any of this. Every single group of ideal clients are very, very different. And the only way you're going to know the answer is by selling those packages to your ideal clients in multiple different ways and getting that feedback, getting that evidence, and then saying, okay, this is what worked. Let me see how I could replicate that. So that's what I would say. For anyone that's hearing this and is like, well, I don't know how to do that, the best place to start is by having those direct conversations with your ideal clients, reaching out to them, getting them on sales calls, understanding their pain points, painting your solution. And if they're not interested, asking for feedback. Why? What's not resonating with you? What's your hesitation here? And if they are interested, selling them in. That's something that will give you more feedback than anything else. And then you can think about building out your funnel from there. So hopefully that helps. Angeline said, my question is about the checkout page on our funnel. What's the best way to create a bump offer through Kajabi? So excited about Freedom Fast Track. Angeline, this is something we'll cover more in detail inside Freedom Fast Track. So that's coming. For right now, if you want to look up offer bump tutorials with Kajabi, there are some out there. The order bump is just a tick box on Kajabi. That's the easiest way to do it right now. One-click offers, upsells are slightly different, but there's just a tick box, and there's quite a few tutorials on Kajabi that could help you with that. But I am excited to work with you. Currently working through the four C's, and I would love to know if you're happy to share some of Boss Babe's conversion rates through the funnel. So let me just share with you some industry standard conversion rates, and you can kind of track yourself against that. So overall, a general industry conversion rate from interested traffic to purchase is 2%. So interested traffic is if you've got an e-com store, someone landing on your page and making a purchase, 2%. Interested traffic is someone who clicked a link in your email to say they were interested in something, and then final conversion without any kind of conversion offer or anything. It's just interested traffic. It's 2%. If you're doing something like a webinar, on the lower end, your conversion would be about 5%. Mid would be about 10%. And on the super high end, if you have a really niche audience, super high converting webinar would be about 15%. So those are the numbers you would work through. Okay. Tasnuva, you want to go next?
A little bit like the last question someone asked, but I think, so I get a little confused whether the price is right or not, because it's 5K and I'm selling 1 to 2 spots and I want to double that. So I have been booking a lot of calls, and the number one thing they always say is, I love your thing. It's working, but it's too much for me. So is there any way I can reduce those objections based on the price point?
Okay. So two things that I would suggest in this situation, if you're unsure if the price point is right. The first thing is for the person that says this is too high for me, offer a lower price and see if they buy. If they don't.
They don't. Downsell at $247 per month. They don't buy it.
Okay. So then it's nothing to do with the price. It's the offer itself is not valuable enough for your ideal client. So often when people say it's too expensive, what they're saying is I don't see the value in it for me. So that's what I would work on, is your value proposition and just developing something that really is irresistible, ticks all of their boxes, takes away any of their fears, and feels like a really irresistible offer. And it sounds like it's less about the price right now and more about the makeup of the offer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have had a great, reactions to my offer. People will say that the free information is working. It's improving. The main thing that I think it's hitting against is the medical system saying you cannot do anything about it. I work with autism kids. Okay. So the medical system says you cannot do anything about it. And I'm saying like, you can do so much more. So they're like, I don't trust her because my doctor is not saying anything like that. That's the number one objection, problem that I have. So how to overcome that? It's like a whole system against me,
Totally. But I would also say, know, like, and trust factor is a factor in any kind of sales process. It's something that every single person that's selling has to overcome. And the higher your ticket price, the higher that objection that you need to overcome is. So I would really just sit and refine and go through the offer and think about every question someone might have. Are you answering that question? Are you providing value on that question? Is there money back guarantees? Like anything that might come up for someone, are you able to come back with something? So whenever I'm creating an offer, I sit and I think about, what are all the things that might make someone hesitate to say yes to this? Well, it's expensive. I might not make my money back. I might not get results. I might drop off. What if I'm not sure of it? Like I think of every single thing and I put a solution toward every single thing.
Okay.
And I think that's really important in an irresistible offer. So for those of you that seen my fast track webinar, here's an excellent example, right? I was like, I know a lot of these people have probably tried building funnels in the past and it hasn't worked for them, or they've gotten tripped up. So in their mind, they're going to be like, yeah, Natalie, I might want to work with you, but what if it doesn't work? And I thought, yeah, that's a really fair point. What if they spend $3,000 and it doesn't work? And I thought, well, I'm going to give them their money back, or I'm going to work with them for free until it does. Like that's when I think about like, what's the hesitation? I just put a solution in front of it of like, yeah, I totally get that might be the hesitation. Let me offer this as a solution. It's going to be different for every single person, right? Like there's going to be a different solution for every single offer, but to make an offer really irresistible, you have to be able to tick the boxes of people's hesitations and build that trust factor in every offer.
Thank you very, very much.
Annette said, how to find the right balance of content with online coaching so it's possible to reach the goal and transformation but not confused with too much content, but it's still worth the money. So the way that I would think about this question, I think this is also a great question for everyone. Whenever you're selling something, whether it's coaching, a program, anything like that, it's never about the amount of content that you offer. And it's not about what's in the content. It's about, is what they implement going to get them the result that they desire? And what are all the jigsaw pieces I need to put together in order to get them to the transformation that I know they want to get to? So whenever I'm creating an offer or curriculum or anything like that, I normally do it on a whiteboard and there's post-it notes everywhere. It's like chaos. But I'm like, okay, I start with where they're at and I go to where they want to be. And I think about what is every single thing they need to do to get from where they are now to where they want to be. What are all the things that they need to do? And then I create curriculum around that, accountability around that, coaching around that. You know, if there's any templates, resources, anything I can give. But I generally don't think about it in terms of like throwing content at them, because if I'm doing it without that journey in mind, I will overwhelm them and I won't get them the results that they're looking for. And I think anytime someone logs into a course, you know, they're not looking for the amount of stuff that's in there. It's, is what's in there actually going to make a difference for me and get me to where I want to go? And that, if they're paying for that transformation, they don't care how much is in there. Do they just care, did I get to that transformation?
Oh, thanks a lot. I think it was, it is like my imposter syndrome that I tend to put a lot of content in the course to make it like more valuable.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Just focus on, are they getting a transformation and are they completing the curriculum? One thing I also do too, if I just notice people are stuck with a certain thing going through the program, then I might add more curriculum, might add explainers, might add more templates. You can just add that through as you go. Okay, Morgan, you want to go next?
Yeah, hi. So there's not a ton of physical product people in the group, I feel like, or I've been having trouble kind of collabing and finding them. So I'm sort of stuck on my qualifier. Because I make physical products, I have like a couple different options. I feel like a quiz, like a scent quiz. So I make candles. And I feel like a scent quiz could be a good qualifier. You're showing more interest than just browsing my website. And that could lead to my core offer. Or it could be like, I thought about making a discovery set, but now I'm making a whole new product. Like a discovery set would be like little tea light samples of my product to give them for like almost cost, just to get the smells and like, cause it's hard to buy online. So I'm wondering like if you've seen anything product-based that would kind of help me narrow this down.
I'm dying Lindsay, to answer that.
You ready?
Yes. I have a product-based business too. And my husband does too.
A 7-figure one we should add. Crushing. Oh, life.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Quiz funnel all day long, all day long. It's what works, especially if people are hesitant. I just did a quiz funnel yesterday for perfumes online, and I've been retargeted by this company over and over and over. And I've always hesitated because I'm like, I love their website is so complete with the scent profile and all these different things. And I'm like, ooh, but like, I'm not going to spend $70 on perfume and have it not smell good. And they just launched a quiz. And at the end of the quiz, I think it's only backdoored at the end of the quiz. It doesn't look like it's anywhere else on their site. They have a tester kit. So like you go through the quiz, it tells you, it gave me the three that it thought matched my profile the best. And then it said, are you not sure? You can buy all 12 of our scents for $45 in like little, this is perfume, you know, but they're in little bottles. And try them all. And then if you want to buy a full size after that, we'll send you a discount code like from once you purchase. And I was like, hell yes, I will spend $50 to save myself $70 of scents that I don't like. Plus now I get to smell the whole range. So maybe I'll end up buying more. So I think when you think of things like this, especially if you know the objection is sent online, which it absolutely is with that type of business, a quiz funnel that gives them a hint and then the ability to buy a tester kit, I think will give you more leads than if you were, than the worry over adding another product to the business. In my business, we are currently adding a trial. Like, we sell supplements, same issue. Like, it's at a high price point and they're not sure which one they want. And so we are adding this exact funnel into our business quiz. And then at the backside of the quiz, you can buy a like sample of the three top products and try them out. And then we'll give you a discount on the backside of the email sequence that comes off that quiz funnel for a full size. So that's what I would do. Speaking from experience in seven-figure product business, people love quizzes. And even if they don't buy, you get their email. Put them, that's my like other little nuance. Once they go through your quiz, even if they don't buy, you now have their email. So have a separate email automation set up that takes them on a journey after they took the quiz and gives them more information on each product, and just hit their inbox a couple more times with the sample kit and with the discount code for taking the quiz. It'll convert.
Awesome. Thank you. Do you mind if I ask what the perfume company was? I want to do their quiz.
Yeah, it's Henry Rose. It's Michelle Pfeiffer. Michelle Pfeiffer's company. Yeah.
Thank you.
I've never smelled their scents, but I get retargeted constantly. And I'm like, I like the names and the description and the aesthetic of the brand. And I have always been so hesitant to buy because of the price point. And now I'm like, now that I can have a tester, now I'm probably going to be a customer. So.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Are you on Shopify and Klaviyo?
I am on Shopify. I'm not on Klaviyo. Is that email?
Yeah.
I was looking at Flowdesk. Maybe Klaviyo's the way to go.
I would look into Klaviyo because all these sequences are pre-built for you on Klaviyo. It's more expensive, but it'll save you a ton of time. And they build these sequences for you. And all you have to do is just put your pictures in and your branding. And then they've already optimized all these sequences based on thousands and thousands of e-com businesses. So I think it's worth the investment if you're really serious about scaling an e-com business.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And do you have a quiz? Sorry to keep going. Do you have a quiz app in Shopify that you have tried and like?
I do. And I don't remember what it's called at this moment, but if you message in the community, I'll find it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. This is my secret passion, product-based people. Don't hesitate to tag me in the community. I'll come help you.
Yeah. I feel like more people need to take advantage of Lindsay's expertise in this space. Okay. Alma said, I have a women's only gym. We struggle with content creation as it's difficult to go and take photos of live session. I wonder what other content I can make. I would do a B-roll day where you're in there and maybe have someone recording you, or you ask for someone that you can record and you just spend a couple hours, creating B-roll that day. That works really, really well. Love B-roll. I have a coaching business and had 180K a year last year. Congratulations. But got almost burned out from how much I worked. I'm looking to launch an online program and scale my coaching business. I followed all the courses, listened to most of podcasts, but the most limiting belief is that I'm not a great educator and I'm mostly afraid of talking to camera. I keep procrastinating recording it. Okay. So I would say in this situation, it's really a great idea to play to your strengths. So what would your strengths be? It sounds like you're really great at working one-to-one with people. So maybe it's what we said earlier, that you would have a live group coaching program. So instead of one-to-one, you're having people in a group and you record these sessions and you turn that into your curriculum. I would just really step back and think about, what are your strengths? What do you really enjoy doing? And then importantly, how can this get results for your clients? And those three things together will help you be able to develop something that plays to your strengths, but also really supports your clients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much for answering that. Like last year, I did group program in a format that was probably a bit like full on. And so now I feel that I'm very hesitant to start again a group program. It was like three sessions a week, you know, accountability and yeah, business coaching and then goal setting and stuff. And so, yeah, like every vessel in my body says now, like, okay, just go for online education because, you know, you keep giving so much of yourself and you always think like it's not enough, you know? But yeah, like I don't think I lack the like the knowledge of how to, but it's just like, yeah, a wall against me versus like scaling and going out there for, yeah, educating more people.
Then you just got to do it. If that's what you feel called to do, you just got to do it. You know, it's like about eating the frogs first. That's what they say. You put it in your calendar. It's the first thing you do every day is you record an hour of curriculum or 2 hours of curriculum, and you just have to do that first. I think if that's the way that you want to go and you know you do want to have an online course, you just have to put it in your calendar and make sure you get it done. Another great way to do it is sell it. And when you've got clients, you have to deliver, and it really puts that forcing function in there for you. So I would think about it in that kind of way. Do you need the accountability? Do you need the clients first? Or do you just need to block it in your calendar and make sure that's the thing that you do first, if this is the path that you know you definitely want to go down?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never tried it. So I like want to give it a shot and to see like, is this what I want to do? Or is this just something in my head, you know,
that
romanticize?
Go for it. Yeah, sell it. And then when it's sold, you have to deliver it. And maybe you deliver it live. And then it turns into an evergreen program. If that's like, there's so many ways that you could create it that would still play to your skills.
Okay, cool. Okay, thank you. Do you think it's, sorry for last thing, do you think it's an idea to like put someone one-on-one in front of my camera and like do the videos like that? Or is that just a lot of noise in the background of like the videos?
I don't know if that would be like an ideal way for someone to consume your content if they felt like they were watching someone else's coaching sessions. I don't know how they'd feel about that.
Yeah, no, okay.
That would be my hesitation on that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll just have to get over it, I guess.
I think so.
Okay, thank you.
Post in the group and see if you can get an accountability partner to just push you and hold you accountable.
Awesome. I will. Thank you.
Okay, last question is, what mic and headphone combo do you recommend? Lindsay, can you just tell them? Because you're the one that sets me up with all of this.
Yeah. So Natalie and I both have the same one and we've perfected it. It's the Shure mic, S-H-U-R-E. And it's, I forget the acronym. We can post it. It's like MH7 or something. If you go to Amazon and type in Shure podcasting mic, it'll pop up. It's black. That one is industry standard, really, really easy to use. And then the headphones we have are Audio Technica headphones. And what makes this set, this is a higher end set. It's not astronomically expensive, but it will give you great audio, but it does require this piece in the middle, a little like connector board that you plug it all together with. It's all on Amazon as a kit, very easy. If that's out of your price range or you don't want that much stuff, the Yeti, the Blue Yeti brand mics are also great. And they just have a USB plug. So they plug right into most, or USB-C right into most laptops directly. And they won't give you the feedback where you need headphones. So if you're going to invest in your podcast, I'm always a fan of just buying the right equipment from the start instead of buying cheap stuff and then having to upgrade. So if you're looking for like good quality, going to last forever, go with the Shure and the Audio Technica. If you are just getting beginner stuff because you're not sure, then the Blue Yeti.
And I bought this stuff and I looked at it and it had so many cables and wires. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And I just literally sat and looked at it. And then Lindsay came over and was like, you just plug it in. Have you looked on YouTube? I'm like, oh, we all have our skills, you guys.
Yeah. I love those kind of puzzles.
I don't. Maybe we'll do a tutorial one day on just like how to set it up. Cause it's so overwhelming.
It is.
Oh my God.
I also recommend, you know, one thing, okay, this is coming from podcaster life. Mic quality is absolutely number one thing to spend money on. The second thing to really pay attention to get good audio is the room you're in. So if you're in a big, like I'm in my kitchen, big echoey room, my audio is probably a little bit thin. So if you're recording in your home or in an office, even what I did is I went to Amazon and I bought soundproofing foam. It's really inexpensive. It's like big, thick black foam with egg carton bumps on it. I bought, I don't know, maybe $100 worth of that. And then I 3M command stripped it to the walls behind me and on the sides of me. And my podcast editor was like, what did you do? Like, where are you recording? It sounds so much better. And I was like, I just put some of this cheap foam on my walls. So foam on your walls and a rug on your floor will make your audio sound so much better. And it's probably $100 of cost. So if you want the like the Yeti microphone and some foam, that's a great way to improve audio quality. Yeah, or sit in the closet. Yeah, you can do all these other.
I put two rugs underneath me, and that really helped too.
Yeah, under a blanket. I remember Jenna Kutcher years ago when I first started listening to her podcast. She said she sat in her closet and she got one of those boxes and she put her mic inside the little box and would like talk inside this box, and that's how she did her podcast for years to get good audio quality inexpensively. So yeah,
I love it. Okay, sorry if we didn't get to your question, you guys. Remember that you can always post all of your questions inside the community as well. We are always, always there to support you. So drop questions in there if you have anything else. And if you've got any questions, just drop me a DM at I am Natalie. Okay, bye, you guys. See you next week.